It is Banner's Filth. It's Neil Atkinson and Mike Kearney with Carl Kopak with Neil Docking. Everyone ready for action. Mike Kearney, what are you printing out and framing?
Neil Docking's response email.
That'll do us. Just need to bear it in mind. The Banner's Filth stuff starts early, listeners. You think it just starts when this show starts. It's a hefty afternoon full of controversy, backbiting, whether or not Jack Tunney needs to get involved, thrown up in the air as well, all the way through on this one. What is or isn't deep.
Docking has mentioned the term HR already.
Yeah, it's the way it goes. Neil, I think you've had a bit of a hard day. You were lakeside when the email dropped with the first two topics, and it's fair to say you were caught on the hop or didn't have Wi-Fi.
I was in leafy West Lancashire, where Wi-Fi is not in abundance, and then I was also undone by certain participants of this contest being unable to hit reply all and having secret communications. Secret communications with the Invigilator.
Like the Freemason?
Yeah, which has somehow been approved.
It's somehow been approved.
Can I just add to that, though? In my defence, if it was me you're talking about. last time I was on this show, I got knocked out of the Final Reckoning because Robbie Savage was nice to Neil.
It's not.
So
listen,
don't come here with your hard news, hard luck stories.
Let's remember that a lot of this stuff is just done on whim. And whimsy, and that by the way is going to continue into this one as well, as it wears on. Alright then, let's see where we get to on this one. I gave them three topics. The first one was a big money buy, and big money I'm going to just sort of define as eight figures and above, for the purposes of this, that Liverpool just don't make. It is removed from the annals of history. The player never happened, never kicked a ball for the Reds. The money could well have gone on other footballers in the same window or in a future window. First up and first in with the reply on this one. 90 seconds, Carl Kopak. Big money buy since Jurgen Klopp took over the club that you would rather Liverpool had never made and the money had gone elsewhere.
Well, it's a Jurgen Klopp signing, and the thing about great managers is that they're very, very lucky in the transfer window, and you can't be lucky all the time, but he was luckier than most. Starts off with Stephen Colker, a bit out of left field, that one. But doesn't spend money on him. And then he does, and he goes big, and he waits an entire year before he brings in Naby Keita. Naby Keita is Jurgen's. It just didn't work. If you want to point at money or anything like that with your Jurgen Klopp mistakes, it's Naby Keita. He comes to the club. He does a lad in training. I don't know if anyone remembers this when he was at Leipzig. He does a lad in training, and then they close the. Because he wants to come over, I think. And they end the session there and then, and I should have known there and then that it wasn't going to work for him. I always thought he was too slow. He has that weird night at Atletico Madrid where he scores a gorgeous goal and simultaneously is the worst player on the pitch by quite some distance. There's a massive, this isn't his fault admittedly, but there's a massive cult around Naby Keita. You've got to give him more chances. And when he did, he just didn't shine at all. And I think the most damning thing is obviously his injuries. He was always out. And I've just checked. And since he left Liverpool, which was the day I celebrated, he has played just 25 games.
Jesus.
In his career. 25 games. 20 of them on loan to Ferencvaros, where he is now. He went to Werder Bremen and disappeared. And he was supposed to be the big hope. He was the big midfield sign, and he was going to kick us on a bit further. And it just didn't happen at all. And I think I'm angriest mostly because people were prepared to defend him at the cost of other Liverpool players who were literally winning trophies.
Okay. Okay, solid 90 seconds there from Carl. Neil Docking, what's your riposte?
I disagree. I think Naby Keita contributed significantly to Liverpool winning trophies, and at his best was part of an absolutely superb midfield, arguably one of the greatest midfields I've ever seen in my time supporting Liverpool. I don't think any of us will ever forget the FA Cup semi-final, the victory against Manchester City. I think when Klopp's shaking his head at full time saying, Naby Keita, wow. The performance he put in alongside Fabinho, alongside Thiago. I mean, at times he was just brilliant in 21-22. He ends up coming in out of the blue, doesn't he, in the League Cup final? Isn't Thiago injured in the warm-up?
Yeah.
Keita comes in, plays the League Cup final, victory over Chelsea. Keita plays the FA Cup final, victory over Chelsea. When Liverpool become champions of the world, the best team on the planet, Keita scores in the semi-final to get to the final, and he plays in the final with, I would argue, a man-of-the-match performance to make Liverpool champions of the world. and we're supposed to believe this is a signing so bad we should ban it forever, a man who helped make us champions of the world.
Mike?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think Carl pointed out, you know, his sort of his injury record and stuff like that, and I don't really want to criticise a man's availability. You know, I love Joe Gomez to bits, and would I ban his signing? No. Naby Keita, as Neil just pointed out there, FA Cup semi-final, man of the match probably, 5-0 at Old Trafford. We rampaged round Old Trafford, and Naby Keita was a huge part of that. Scores and assists, I think, that game. I think he sets Mo Salah for one of his goals of his hat-trick. He is a part of a Liverpool side that have won historical things. Do I wish he'd have played more and we'd have seen more of what, you know, we're all left remembering fondly, in my opinion anyway. Yes, I do. I'm sad it never got to be that. I'm sure there's no one more sad than himself that's the case. But I've got real gratitude for him being in that squad and being a part of winning these things for Liverpool. And whatever people like to say about him in his career, he absolutely contributed to that period.
All right, Carl, 30 seconds to discuss the fact that Naby Keita has received every major honour whilst playing for Liverpool.
I love the argument that he made us a world champion with his debut goal for Liverpool against the world-class team that is Monterrey. He really, really charged in it. I was at that semi-final against City, and he played well. And he did have the odd game. I'm not saying he was terrible all the time, but he was just terrible an awful lot of the time, and a lot of the time he wasn't available at all. So, I never saw it. Never saw it at all.
Okay, never saw it at all. All right, let's get over. Next one along the line that we have here is, let me get the right timer up. Okay. Got that one there. Marvellous. All right. Let's have a little look at Mike Kearney. Mike, who are you going for? Who is your signing that you would have Liverpool not have made?
I think it's harsh to say this because I love every player who plays for Liverpool. And this one, to me, probably makes the most sense in terms of we can spread the money around. At a time, we signed Georgi Mamardashvili and leave him at Valencia on loan, £25 million on a goalkeeper that we don't have for a year. He now comes in at the start of this season and is the deputy to Alisson, which you will get games. I feel harsh judging him, saying, you know, the team's not being great, but would I rather have the 20? I looked at this question as where would I have rather had this money, and when would I rather have had it spent? And I think last year we had a fantastic year in the league. You know, we lose out in the FA, the League Cup final to Newcastle, and we go to PSG on pens in the end, as we've been reminded several times over the last 18 months. And I think maybe if we just had that extra player in the squad when we get towards the end of that season, instead of it being, you know, sitting on the playing for Valencia on loan, being a goalie. Look, I'll always back Liverpool players, but in this particular one, I think not having this signing and having the money available to the Jurgen Klopp, the season, you know, the deal was done, or Arne Slot in his first January, it would have been what I would have plumbed for.
Okay. Carl Karpak, Mamardashvili.
Yeah, I get the argument about the, you know, could the money be spent somewhere else? But I think the problem with that is we were always going to need a goalkeeper. He'd always have to be a certain level and a certain standard, and they don't come as free. A lot of that is obviously based on Keller. I think some of the right criticism about that, I think it's a bit harsh. I think we're judging him through the prism of Alisson, which is, you know, arguably Liverpool's greatest goalkeeper. I think he is, actually. So it's a bit harsh to put him on that, but I thought we were recording this after Galatasaray, and I thought he did all right in Galatasaray. It didn't really do anything wrong. I think it's a bit harsh. I think it's just being a subject to the market, really, because you're not going to get a free the day. We're not going to buy Adrian again, you know. So and don't then expect him to go and win the league if Alisson's out, which he is most seasons. I think sometimes you just got to spend the money.
Okay, Neil.
I think you've got to remember how highly rated Mamardashvili was and what a prospect he is, and that we do have to, much as it pains us all to say it, we do have to look to the future. And at some point, Alisson is going to leave and have to be replaced. And Kelleher's, what, 27? Wasn't realistic that he was ever going to stay around a second choice forever. He wants to play. He wants to build his own career. That's totally fair enough. Alisson can't kick the ball anymore, for starters. He's coming to the end of his tenure. What a fabulous career it's been. We need a new goalkeeper. And Alisson's pulled up injured in training this week, been unavailable. The Reds have gone to Galatasaray. And Mamardashvili has made 3 saves, including at least one, I'd say, very crucial, critical save to stop the Reds going 2 goals down and potentially out of the Champions League. You know, our strongest remaining objective this season, winning that tournament, winning that trophy. So you had to bring in a goalkeeper. And it's always a bit frustrating when a player comes a year late. I get that. I understand the frustration around that part of the deal. But I'm not writing him off at this stage. I quite simply haven't seen enough of him. And I think it's premature to suggest that he should be banned.
Okay, Mike Kearney, 30 seconds.
I'd like to clarify, I'm not saying that I would not sign him maybe down the road. But I would rather have had that money on the pitch last season. And yes, we could have kept Kelleher, you know, a year or two more. Who knows, that we've sold him. And he's thriving, in my opinion. He was a large part of the reason we win the league last year. And look, if you can't get by another year or two with that, while you're potentially signing another great midfielder, really solid backup left back, right back, centre back, whatever.
Okay.
That's my argument. Is I would have genuinely just rather seen the money on the pitch last season.
Okay, last one. 90 seconds to make an argument. That's Mamardashvili sorted out. 90 seconds to make an argument. Liverpool signing since Jurgen Klopp came in, 8 figures or above that you can say never happened. Neil Docking.
It pains me to say this, but I think it's very obvious if you look at our squad currently, what we're missing in wide areas, the problems, the unavailability. The issues Slot has when it comes to selecting the players we need in wide attacking positions. And he's hamstrung. One of the ways in which he's hamstrung is often when he turns to the bench, the only option is Federico Chiesa. And Federico Chiesa, he might have one of the best songs in recent years, but in reality, he's no option. He offers so little to this squad. He's on 150 grand a week. He's cost over £10 million to bring in. I mean, sometimes, you know, Edwards and Co are meant to be the smartest guys in the room and they're meant to, you know, see Moneyball signings. This is a player I think all of football knew was a shadow of the player he used to be after he did his ACL and was out for 7 months. He's finished. In the first season, he just couldn't get fit. He admitted it himself. He was just so far off the base. We win the Premier League. He makes 6 appearances and only 1 start after the league is won. No goals. I mean, 14 appearances overall last season, 2 goals. 29 appearances this season so far, 3 goals. Nearly all of them are relevant strikes in domestic cups. It's just a crying shame, really. We can all see the player he used to be. You can see his technique. You can see his intelligence. You can see his will to win. There's so much to admire about him. But he knows what he needs to do, but his body simply can't do it. And watching him struggle and toil time after time, it's just a sad sight. And the managers are rating and want to use him, and it's costing us, basically. It's a dead spot in the squad.
A dead spot in the squad, Mike Kearney. What do we make of that?
Yeah, look, normally the way to go on Bandersfield is to slate your opponent's opinions and views. But I do agree with Neil an awful lot there, and I think, you know, maybe £25-30 million would have helped maybe replace or give Chiesa somebody else, you know, firepower off the bench. That would have been nice, wouldn't it? Last season, yeah, you know, he's had his moments, he's had the songs. I've loved singing them and celebrating last year. He's had a winning goal or two this year as well in the league, you know, and crucial goals. I do see his point. Yeah, I mean, he's up there definitely as one that I would consider as well as Mamardashvili. I'm getting money on the pitch,
Carl.
Yeah, I mean, I accept the argument, but I was made up when he came in because he was the best player in the Euros that season when they beat England. I just thought he was a really, really exciting player when he came on. I think the injury thing's not really his fault. I get the argument about it, but he's also one of those players when he comes on, I do genuinely think he's going to do something because he's very, very direct. And as Mike says, you know, he has scored some pretty big goals, Bournemouth. I like the fact he scored it, one of his earliest goals, maybe even his first, I don't know, was it Wembley in the League Cup final. He's had hard lines, I admit that, but I do feel a little bit more buoyed when he comes on, just because I think he's going to run with someone directly, which is something we've stopped doing recently for the season. I just like forwards who just run at people, and that's not really been a characteristic of this season, so I don't mind him for that, to be honest.
Stopped us losing the game as well this season against Sunderland, which people forget.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Fair points there from Mike. Neil, what are you making of it?
Yeah, I mean, I have sympathy for him. As I say, it's not his fault that he's always injured, but you know, the Euros, where he's arguably the player of the tournament, is 5 years ago, which is a hell of a long time in football. And when we signed him, I like to convince myself maybe that we've seen something, maybe we can pull a rabbit out of the hat here with a player that, to all intents and purposes, people think is done, but he is done. I mean, his first goal for us, it wasn't the Consolation League Cup final, it was against Accrington Stanley. Who are they?
You know, even bigger.
It's just been unfortunate. He's just been restricted to so little his time here. He'll be remembered fondly in some respects because of the chant, but really in contributions on the pitch, not.
Okay, we're going to go forward on this one to the Facebook subscribers group with Keita and with Chiesa. They'll be the two that go forward with a vote. I think Mamardashvili, it just feels a little harsh when he's getting his feet under the table. And Mike, the way you've misread my whimsical nature on this one is you've always got to remember, I don't really consider goalkeepers to be real footballers. You know, it's nice that they get to use the hands and that. But, you know, if we're talking about the real business, it's going to involve the lads who just predominantly use their feet.
What about when Pepe Reina played in midfield in pre-season friendly? You know, I think it was Austria.
It was just good to see that he was, you know, interested in taking a turn of proper football, Carl, and not hiding.
He's seeing it. He wants to go now.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Did he play on the right wing?
No, he plays centre mid.
Comes in, he's just 10 minutes at centre mid. Rafa was wearing jeans. Everyone was having a wild time.
Little political gag for you there.
Yep. There we are.
Nice. Very nice.
All right, we'll move forward. And the next one that I gave them, topic, I don't think we've ever done it before. A lot of these, the similarities, but it occurred to me today, you can get rid of an own goal by a Liverpool player. So an own goal by a Liverpool player will never have happened. Now, I think that this one is a really fascinating thing because I think that the way this comes together, well, let's just sort of do it. There are some own goals that I think define a footballer in a way that one could say it's no bad thing in the grand sweep of history, but we'll see where we all end up. First up then, own goal that you wish had never happened, Mike Kearney.
So I'm going to take you back to April 2008, the Rafa Benitez Liverpool European royalty of my generation's European royalty of being in semi-finals and finals. And I'm going to take you right back to the last minute of us beating Chelsea in the third occasion that we would have done so in a semi-final of the Champions League. We're 1-0 up and the ball comes across and Yonan Arisa diving headers it into the net instead of using his right foot. And it's an away goal in 2008. So the away goals rule still is in existence. Chelsea then go back to Stamford Bridge with the advantage and we lose out on aggregate 4-3. Drawing that game now, it wouldn't be as big of an impact and I may have not just gone for it. But the fact that the away goal rule is there and absolutely kills teams back then in terms of, you know, you can draw over the 180 minutes essentially and be out because of the away goals rule, we would have gone through. I think psychologically winning that game would have been huge. Chelsea would have been formidable opponents, obviously, because of, you know, we were all there, we lived it and we've known it. But I think, you know, Torres scores in the second leg. If we just scored in that second leg after keeping a clean sheet, Liverpool are huge favourites. It's a potential European final against Manchester United, yes.
Okay.
But I think Liverpool would have had under the European Cup.
Okay. Who amongst us will argue against this, Neil Docking?
Oh, God. I mean, it's about as deflated as I think I've ever been in Anfield. It's got to be one of the worst moments any of us collectively experienced. I think it's very hard to argue otherwise. Because we battered them, didn't we?
Yeah.
And Czech was inspired. I remember one Czech tips over the bar.
Yeah.
And we just battered them and just couldn't get the second goal. And it was a sickener. And he didn't have to do it. Like, he easily could have cleared it if he'd gone with his other foot. And it was at the end of a time where I think he'd gone from being a fan favourite to being one of those players that annoyed a lot of fans and got and wound up a lot of people, sort of a player in the team that did your head in. And this sort of cemented that at that stage where you just didn't want to see him ever again. After this moment, it was a killer. But we, as I say, Chelsea were very formidable opponents. We got ourselves, we gave it a good go, didn't we, in the second leg. The one thing I will say is the prospect of a Champions League final against Manchester United in Moscow, the blood and carnage that would have ensued, and losing that game, losing a Champions League final to United would hurt a million times more than an own goal conceded in the last minute at Anfield against Chelsea. I'm not going to say it was a kindness, but in the long run, I think he may have avoided us from what would have been even worse.
Wow.
Carl.
It's come to me to defend John Arnarisa. Life throws up these struggles occasionally. I think the only thing I can really say is from that Neil said there was a lot of people went against John Arnarisa after what happened. Obviously, he could have cleared the ball with the right foot, but he hasn't got one, puts it in his left and it goes in because he hasn't done enough work on his right foot. People did really go after Arisa and they didn't want to see him in the side again. These are Arrivists. I was banging that drum for years before he did that. I was campaigning. I was one man standing outside the standing with a placard saying, please don't put that man in the side ever again. I would never really been a fan of John Arisa, to be honest. It's one of the cruel ironies in life. And it's one of those rare occasions where I'm not happy that I'm right about it because... yeah, that was a low point, but from a player I had very little time for.
Okay. Mike, you've got 30 more seconds to make the case for John Arnarisa's own goal never happening.
I don't think I need them, but what I will say is, look, it was a horrific night, and I'm not just giving you the chance to give Liverpool what would be a seventh European Cup. I'm letting you take one off Man United as well. As much as it would have been an awful game, a tense game, Rafa Benitez's Liverpool side in Europe were unbelievable. And I think we'd have absolutely had their number in the final. I just think we had the edge in cup competitions under Rafa, a supremely, supremely tactical, brilliant manager, and Liverpool were on fire in Europe at that time.
Okay. All right, next one.
I will add, sorry, just before we go, I will add, if you've got the time, Google John Arnarisa, SMS King, and Daily Star.
Okay.
And have a read of his antics after winning the Champions League.
Yeah.
And an identical text message he sent to every beautiful model, actress, and singer in Norway that he could think of, asking them all out on a date immediately with exactly the same worded text, which they then all leaked to the press in Norway. Sterling work.
It's a WhatsApp broadcast, isn't it, before the days of WhatsApp broadcasts.
Indeed. All right, next one. Next own goal that we wish had never happened, Neil Docking.
I'm not going to go for it. I talked about one of those crushing moments I've experienced at Anfield. This is one of those crushing moments I've experienced away from Anfield, and it was in Cardiff, the League Cup final in 2005. The Steven Gerrard own goal against Chelsea. It's absolutely devastating. We've already lost them twice that season. Joe fucking Cole has scored both goals, including one of the bleakest New Year's days any of us have ever witnessed. Mourinho, everyone's already established he's a cunt. There's been continuous links with Gerrard joining Chelsea. We go 1-0 up in the first minute with Arisa volley, funnily enough, after the previous conversation. Arisa volley. We fail to make it 2-0. We do have chances, but we're holding on. And in the 79th minute, Ferreira puts in a free kick. And Gerrard heads the ball into his own net. And you could have... Oh, it was horrendous. Peter Drury commentating, I only found out about this afterwards, said everyone's been talking about all the many goals Gerrard is going to score for Chelsea. And that's the first one. What a dickhead. Then we also have our end turning on him, quite frankly, in the closing stages. People saying fuck off to Chelsea then. There was a suggestion that somehow he'd already made his mind up, already wanted it. It was grim. It sees in extra time. Drogba scores, Kesman scores, Antonio Nunes gets a consolation. Mourinho, famously, the ball hits the net. Mourinho shushes our fans and gets sent off. It was just horrific. It was a horrible, horrible end to a cup final and a long journey home. It was so grim. And for days afterwards, Gerrard took a lot of stick that was totally undeserved.
Okay. Mike Keaney, why are you letting this one stand?
To be honest, this is 2004 season, 2004-05 season?
2004-05, yeah.
Yeah, so my only argument for maybe letting this stand is it sort of inspired the fire for the semi final that follows in Europe that season. It was a completely deflating moment as a fan, of course it was, but I think it may have just lit a fire under Steven Gerrard, really. And I'm maybe, you know, to win things in Liverpool as the captain, you know, that must have contributed. The fact that he knows, look, it's football happens and mistakes happen and so on and so forth. It's his own goal. We still had time to go and win it. We sadly lost, as we now know, obviously. But I think that letting that stand may just cause, you know, fire and hunger in the belly for the European Cup win that season.
Okay, Carl.
I think the Antonio Nunes goal might be the worst goal Liverpool have ever scored. it's absolutely awful. It's such a bad goal. Yeah, and obviously there's no positives here. The only thing I will say is that it sort of adds to the Steven Gerrard tragedy, the tragic career, which is covered in glory, but will always be remembered for games against Chelsea, of course, he flirted with. I agree with Mike. I was going to go down that same road, to be honest. Maybe I'll never forget Rafa saying before the second leg, you know, the Garcia game, that he said, Jose likes to talk, but he'll lose this one. And I think he was going to lose that one because of what happened in Cardiff. So just take it on to bigger things. And obviously, we'd like a League Cup, but we'd rather have the Champions League. And if one forced the other, I can sort of live with it. But yeah, that was a horrific day. The whole, it was Mourinho's first trophy, the shushing of the crowd, people getting on Gerrard's back, and that Risa goal was offside.
Okay. Neil Docking. I mean, I can't believe that Carl took that goal off Jan Arne.
I'm happy to take that off. Let's go down with nothing.
All that you described, Antonio Nunes' finest hour as the worst goal in the
world. His only hour.
Disgusting, I think he said.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's sad all round, really, that Carl wants to add to the tragedy of Steven Gerrard, add to the tapestry of the down and awful moments of his career. Or that either of them, either the two gentlemen here, want to just sort of rely on hypothetical butterfly arguments of how this may have somehow further fueled what happened against Chelsea, and that if we had won that League Cup, then we wouldn't have the fire in the belly to defeat them in the Champions League semi-final. I'm not buying it.
Okay, there we are. Last one, 90 seconds on which own goal Carl Kopak would like to get rid of.
There are some games where everything goes against you and hardly any of it's your fault. I'm going to go to September 2023 against Tottenham Hotspur. That game, that man, that referee. It's just one of the most extraordinary things I've ever seen, where you genuinely think that there are people in little sort of shacks in car parks who just decide Liverpool aren't going to win today. And it's Joel Matip's own goal against Tottenham. We've gone down to 10 men because of Curtis Jones just sent off for not a foul. Jota sent off for nowhere near being a foul. And then they chalk off our goal for Luis Diaz. I still frown at Simon Hooper to this day. I still feel a little rise in my belly every time I see him on the screen. And obviously his mates in VAR. But what the tragedy for this for me is that we were so good at nine men. And I thought, we're going to get a point with nine men against Tottenham. And there's nothing more demoralised than thinking, we've literally given you everything, lads. We have given you everything. And you're not going to do it. It's going to be a 1-1. And then, you know, in the last minute that happens. And it's such a cruel, just such a cruel occurrence that, you know, everything goes against us. We get it back. And then, you know, it goes so sadly wrong for such a great man as well.
All right. Carl, such a great man as well. I would even have considered starting that way, but, you know, we'll go from there. Neil Docking.
Yeah, it's a brutal moment. A brutal moment that capped off an evening that was just beyond infuriating, encapsulating so much that's wrong with the way the game is officiated. I, for my sins, was on a family night at a Halloween-themed trail. Family night at a Halloween-themed trail in Warrington, as if this picture can get any bleaker. trying to keep up with the game on my phone. And then obviously just shouting out in anger and anguish in the final moment. And then when you're with your family and you actually have parental responsibility and you have to pretend to be a decent, rational, normal human being when all you want to do is set the world on fire, is always the worst. How you handle a moment like that, I've got very little to say about it. But I would argue, in the grander scheme of things, it didn't cost us silverware, a chance at silverware in that moment. It wasn't a defining moment, and a moment that's denied us a trophy, a moment that will go down in history. I think the story of that evening will always be the disallowed goal and what could have been, rather than the final moment.
Okay, Mike Kearney.
Yeah, look, I think we've all expunged that anyway, haven't we? Really, I refuse to acknowledge it exists anyway. In a weird way, you know, as Neil said, it's a point, and yet it would have been a lovely point at the time. But you know, there's other options there involving, you know, a European Cup potentially being added and taken away, added to us and taken away from rival, a trophy added to Liverpool. Or at all, like, I love Joel Matip, and whether he scores that own goal or not doesn't change that for me. And you know, it's one of them. The disallowed goal is the disgrace of that night, and should be remembered for therefore how, you know, we lost that game because of inept refereeing performance in the VAR booth on the pitch. You know, Joel Matip's performance has never let me down, and I don't mind if it stands. I'm all right with it, because my love for that man knows no bounds.
Okay, Carl Kopak.
It won't be expunged for me, because I'm still angry about it now. And as I say, every time I see Simon Hooper's face, it just infuriates me. And another thing it infuriates me for as well is that Postecoglou said, you know, oh, this football, that happens. And then Vince and company said, yeah, you just got to get on with it because that happens. And then weeks later, they were done by the same system. And you know, didn't see the hypocrisy of that whatsoever. Now I'm still genuinely furious about it now. And every time VAR is mentioned, my mind flies to that game, and it's such a cruel ending.
Okay, I'm gonna put all three forwards for this. I've got to say, when I put this one in, I thought, oh, it'll end up, you'll go through this, and it'll end up being the Risa one. I'm really swayed. I'm not that I get a vote, or I can, I suppose, but anyway, three will go forward and everyone can vote. I'm really swayed on the Matip one. And there's a couple of reasons why. One is because it's all there and then. Like, if he doesn't score it, then it goes 1-1, and you can't argue about, well, we might still have, you know, Chelsea might still have got an equaliser anyway, in either sort of sense. The other thing to point out, I've just double-checked this. That was the only game we lost until February.
Yeah.
So that team, Jürgen's new side, would have been effectively unbeaten until February. And if you give them the additional points before they go to Arsenal and lose that game, they'd have been six clear. And if you want to do the flapping of the butterfly thing, if they were six clear, as of when they went to the Emirates, they may well have been able to get a result. I'm really swayed by it, but I think I'm also just swayed by it because I think Joel Matip's fucking great. And he was so devastated at the back of the net. Anyway, really good answer from Carl, but I'll put all three and you can all vote on that one and we'll see which way it goes. All right, then. Last one I said was I like to always try to have one positive one. Make an argument for a side that currently sits between third and 10th in the Championship to come up through the playoffs. I'm going to act as though Coventry and Middlesbrough are home and hosed. It gives you, I think it's seven more sides, obviously, to pick from, eight more sides to pick from, all the way down to 10th as to who you'd like to have come up. First one on this, Neil Docking.
I'd like Wrexham to come up, and I feel like I might be swimming against the tide here. I feel like a lot of people instantly want to reject the notion of any fairy tale story, especially if a fairy tale story involves lots of money being spent to propel a team up the leagues. But what's happened there over the last few seasons has been nothing short of extraordinary. I don't think anyone can die. Even with money that's been injected, nobody would have thought when two Hollywood stars, or a Hollywood actor and a TV star from America, Canada, come over, invest in a team in the doldrums that couldn't get out of non-league, nobody would have thought that they would now find themselves on the precipice of the Premier League. And Wrexham are a team that just haven't been on the radar for so long. I mean, when did Liverpool last play them? I had to look it up. A League Cup win in 1978. 3-1 win for the Reds. Before that, I think last played them in 1970. They're a team that just haven't been on my radar at all. They're a team that on the turn of the millennium nearly went out of existence because of an unscrupulous owner who I think they had to take to the courts. It's astonishing what they're doing there. And I love the story of it. And I think it'd be great to have them in the Premier League, to have all the hype, everything that goes around it. You know, the bit of Hollywood glitz and glamour, a story, a new side. It's not far to travel for an away. And my memories last time we went there for away were absolutely brilliant. If you want to talk about Rafa Benitez in jeans and Craig Bellamy in the sunshine, get them back.
All right. Carl Kopak, how are we feeling about Neil Docking's Hollywood dream?
I get it completely, but you've just used the words I can't stand, which is Hollywood glitz and glamour. Football's not about Hollywood glitz and glamour. Wrexham is the racehorse ground was a grim place to go to. I know they've got that rivalry between Chester and Tranmere, and they didn't always get on before and after the game. Let's just say that. I'm not overly critical about Wrexham, but I do feel it's a bit like, I know I sound like a Jane Austen character, but it's a bit like new money to me. And I'd just rather other teams just went up. I'm very, very pro Welsh, but I just rather there's more romance to it if they're a bit grim.
Carl, how does your pro Welsh values manifest themselves in everyday life?
I lived briefly in South Wales, and I listen to an awful lot of Welsh podcasts. I'm going to Cardiff next week to see
Associated
Sports Bar. Yeah, and.
Okay,
and
fair.
And we're growing up in Liverpool. There's a lot more Welsh in Liverpool. Yeah. Oh, big fan.
A big fan. Excellent. No. I'm also a big fan of the Principality. It is amongst my favourite places in the world. Love the Gower Peninsula. If you haven't been, yeah, you should be making plans to go. But then that might link into somebody else's answer in a minute, so we shouldn't get too carried away. Mike Kearney, 30 seconds on... Well, if you want to discuss... Well, no, it's not 30 seconds for you, as long as you like, but if you want to discuss the Welsh, you can. But Wrexham, in general.
I don't know if I can be asked. I really don't know if I can be asked with them, you know, like...
Yeah.
It's I just can't be asked. I was sad for them that they lost against Chelsea the other day in the FA Cup because they were the underdog and... You know, they were down to 10 men, maybe rightly or wrongly so, whatever, and he scored a goal at the end where maybe the lad should just leave it because it may be going in. I want the underdog to win, but they're not really the underdog in that league, in the league they came up from, or the league they came up from, the back-to-back-to-back promotions. We all know why it's happened. Neil Disney Docking there once at Hollywood FC in the Premier League. That's a madness. Maybe for the clicks on his website that he works for. I don't know. I'm just can't be asked with it, really. I've said that a few times, and maybe it's a strong theme there, but I really can't be that bothered with Wrexham in the Premier League, if I'm honest. It's a shit small ground.
All right, Neil Docking, it's a shit small ground.
The racecourse ground in Wrexham is the world's oldest international football stadium still in use, having hosted its first international match in 1877. But it's a shit small ground to Mike Kearney, a man who has no respect for history, no tradition, no respect for international football, no respect for the pedigree of Wrexham.
Do you think he's got any respect for the Welsh, Neil?
It doesn't sound like it to me. It doesn't sound like it to me. No respect for the Welsh.
I love
no
Amelia Bonnet.
For a great football club. We've been through it all, almost went out of business. They've never played in the top flight. It's new, it's fresh, it's exciting. And, you know, what better way to them to come up there? They're the dogs in the Championship and remember the memory of Joey Jones, Liverpool legend, who played for both sides.
There we go. Mike Kearney. Disrespecting the Welsh at every turn. I think we can all agree, you know, it's a way to live, but I think it's, you know, I just think at some point we've got to get beyond it, Mike, but you do you in the fullness of time. Some of his best friends are Amelia Bonner.
Yeah.
Anyway, Carl Kopak, of the teams that currently sit between third and 10th in the Championship at the time of recording, which one would you like to see in the Premier League?
I'm slightly worried about inflaming Mike's racist tendencies here again. But it would be Swansea. It's Swansea for various reasons. One thing I will say is I've just actually just updated the table here because there's games going on now. They're no longer in the top 10.
Fuck it. You can have it.
They were at the beginning of this record, so I'm having it. Swansea, I've only been once to see Liverpool there. What ended up being the John Joe Shelby derby where he seemingly played for both sides. It was weird. It's got an absolutely tremendous chippy outside the ground. It's genuinely world class. It's fantastic. And it's up there with the Sing Fong. And in terms of getting through chips and getting through thousands of people, they'll do a thousand in about 30 seconds. It's amazing. I always like Swansea anyway. The Gower mumbles somewhere around there. My podcast host, which I do somewhere else, is from Swansea. It's a fantastic place. And who wouldn't want to see Snoop and Anfield in the director's box?
Whoa. I mean, there's still 20 seconds here, so I'm just going to ask does that not count as Hollywood glitz and glamour?
I mean,
it certainly does.
I think you can say more South LA than Hollywood.
The Zoom connection there.
I mean, he's not hanging around with Ryan Reynolds, is he?
I mean, he might be. He starred in Starsky and Hutch alongside... He's in Starsky and Hutch. Anyway. Okay.
Can I just make one final point? Sorry, because
go on. I've stepped over.
When he was there recently, and he went onto the pitch, Ellis James, whose podcast we're going to see next week, said that there was reports that there was a strong smell of weed in the tunnel as the players came out. Absolutely tremendous.
Excellent stuff. All right, Mike Kearney.
Apart from my character be smashed there at the start of Carl's 90 seconds.
Sorry, Mike, I didn't take that back.
It's fucking miles away, Swansea, you know. Like, we done a show ages ago, and Neil Dockham tried to tell me that Middlesbrough was 4 hours away from Liverpool. Let me tell you, Swansea City's about 5 hours away from Liverpool. It's fucking miles away. They're all right. I mean, they've got the club. He was in Klopp's team, wasn't he? Vita Matos, is it? Who's the Swansea manager at the minute?
Yeah.
I'm really pleased for him that he seems to be doing well. Wouldn't be massively against it, even though I prefaced it. It's miles away. I think it's you know, they've been a successful Premier League side in the past. They've won something in the past without needing the glitz and glamour, even though they've got like a little bit of a rinsing of it now. They're fairly inoffensive, Swansea. Where is I just can't be arsed at Wrexham. I'd be all like, oh, Swansea are up. They'll be up for a season or two and then they'll be down again.
All right. Neil Docking, Swansea. Why Wrexham, not Swansea? What's wrong with Swansea?
Oh, I can't stand Swansea. I don't want them up under any circumstances. Like everyone says, it's fucking miles away. It's not a convenient trip to North Wales to the world's oldest international football stadium. It is a long trip to watch a team that want to... Oh, when I think back all that death by passing... We won the passing. When I think back to the Rodgers era of Swansea, when I think back to some of the results we had against them, it was desperate. We had some desperate times against them. Under Jurgen Klopp, when we lost 3-2 at Anfield, that was grim. We went down there once and lost 3-1 as well. I think that was under Rodgers, wasn't it? When Benteke scored. We didn't have a good time of it down there. Not at all. I can't be doing with Swansea. Not at all. They've had a time in the top flight. They weren't particularly welcome. Don't want them back.
All right, Carl Karpak.
Well, the romance of the club in its links to Liverpool as well. John Toshak, Ian Callaghan, Tommy Smith, Ray Kennedy. He, of course, won the Welsh Cup with Swansea. Take the time, Mike, and travel and see the world. Take the time.
And look, close.
Go and look at the mumbles. It's just incredible. Dylan Thomas's house. You can go to Dylan Thomas's house, and then you can go to the best chippy in Wales afterwards. Tremendous place.
It's 4 hours. It's currently 4 hours, 11 minutes from Liverpool to Swansea.
You get to Middlesbrough quicker, I can tell you that.
just sort of pointing that out.
Yes, but it's in Middlesbrough.
But I mean, Mike Kearney's next. I know which one he's gone for, which is another place that's much further away than people think. Mike Kearney, what are you doing for us?
I mean, it's the bottom of the M62, Neil. It's two hours 30 tops, I'd say, maybe. It certainly felt like that every time I've travelled there. The angle I've gone for is Hull City. I can't be asked for Millwall, can't be asked for Ipswich, can't, as formerly stated, really can't be asked for Wrexham. Southampton's fucking miles away. You know, Hull, we've got a lone player on Hull at the minute, Kumis. And if they end up getting promoted, that means he'll have done well. He scored 3 goals for them. He's only been there since January, I think. So, look, I like to see Liverpool players doing well, and Lewis Kumis would be a massive part of Hull's promotion push, the fifth at the minute, or the certainly way when I picked them. And they'd get homeable with 3 hours. I reckon within 3 hours. I went to Wolves last week on the irregulars bus with Kev Walsh and a bar the football. It was a lovely trip out, and I reckon you could get home from Hull on a bus in about 3 hours. With great company, and it's not 5 hours on a coach, 6 hours on a coach from Swansea. Yes, Wrexham's close, but I'm just, look, ultimately, Neil, all I'm in it for is the progression of Liverpool, whether it be young players or, you know, I just in general. And I think them nice closer ways after a long week in Europe, just something to recommend in the small margins.
Okay, excellent stuff. Bang on 90 seconds there from Mike. Neil Docking, Hull City.
Oh, firstly, Liverpool to Hull, 2 hours 28. Liverpool to Middlesbrough, 2 hours 39. Wow, that extra 11 minutes really makes all the difference. All the difference.
Who said that about Middlesbrough?
Bloody hell. harking back to Banlisville days gone past. Hull City, again, a team where we've had so many bad results. Whenever we seem to travel there, bloody hell, we get turned over so often. Niasse scoring in a 2-0 win for Hull City. Ugh. Michael Dawson scoring in a 1-0 win for Hull City. Ugh. 3-1 win for Hull City. Bloody Liam Rossini was involved. And Martin Skrtel, own goal. Should have had that one in the own goals list. Another abject outing to East Yorkshire. Hull are a team that we've had such a bad experience travelling there down the years. It's not long since they were up. Giovanni's not playing for them anymore. There's no more magic or marvel about Hull. They're not scoring 30-yard wonder goals with Brazilians in the middle. It's an uninspiring story. The way the club's been run, they deserve to go down. There's nothing about them that screams fairy tale. There's nothing about them that says Hollywood glitz and glamour. You couldn't get any less glitz or glamour than Hull. I mean, if you're talking dream destinations, broaden your horizons, go to Hull and you'll immediately want to go somewhere else. I'm not having Hull City back in the top flight.
Felt quite impassioned, Carl Kopak.
Mike, you can't judge a day out by the fewest roads taken. And I fully applaud that you found the ground, which is literally one road away from the Rocket. I mean, well done for that. But I've got it down to one road, everyone. So this is going to be fine. But, you know, if we're doing changes and junctions, we're not having any.
I mean, it is if I'm driving, let me tell you.
Yeah, I was at that 3-1. It isn't a nice place to go. Yeah, that 3-1 was grim. Victor Moses, I think, plays for us that day as well. Even though the ground's named after my initials, it's just quite nice, or it was. I don't know if it still is or not. And yeah, I don't really count them. One thing I will say about Hull, which is quite nice, is when I went that day, they were doing the protest about the owners. And I just went home and said, what's going on? Can you tell me what's happening? Because I don't know the full story on this. And they stood there for 15 minutes and told me, none of this anti-Scouse stuff. They stood there and told me what's going on, which I really appreciated. But they don't really inflame the soul for me.
It was the KC Stadium. Intriguingly, yeah. It's now the MKM Stadium at Mike Stadium, rather than the Carl Kopak Stadium. Mike Kearney, Mike Stadium. 30 seconds, Mike, on sticking up for the side that is very much committed to naming itself after you.
I mean, Carl just made a really point there. The fans are, you know, sticking up for their own like we would.
Yeah, really
seem like really nice people. I don't know, anti-Scout stuff, tick, tick, tick. You know, it is genuinely... you know, Neil's got the Google out there in Ormskirk. All of a sudden, he's got signal, and he's looking at the past results. But we generally or normally wallop them at Anfield, and I believe in Arne Slot's Liverpool next season or whatever manager we've got. We'll be able to go there and just, you know, have a nice win. It's Premier League games aren't meant to be easy. yes, but you know, it just I don't know. I've much rather play Hull City, I think, than like a Wrexham where all the cameras are there and all that jazz, and Swansea's a bit meh. It's all a bit meh. And I really, my selfish point of view is, let's get Lewis Coomer scoring loads of goals and developing for Liverpool, and then get 6 points next year when Hull come up.
Okay, excellent. I'm surprised no one plumped for Derby, which is actually legitimately quite close and is a good football ground in there as well. 1 hour, 50 minutes to get to Derby. Bit of messing about, but Alton Towers is nearby. I'm going to go with Wrexham and Hull put forward for this one. I am swayed by Swansea being so far away. I did like the toilet tail of this chippy, let me be clear. But also...
Trust me on this.
But also, as I was unsure, so I instinctively don't want Wrexham because of the palaver, but I would quite like to see where the public go. And given the actual nature of the question, I have actually double-checked, and yes, Swansea right now do find themselves quite firmly no longer in the top 10. So
they've not had a good day.
They've not had a good day at all. So yes, we'll go with that one with Wrexham and Hull, and people can decide whether or not they want glitz and glamour, or whether or not they want the MKM Stadium.
Whether or not, like you, they'd rather see Ollie McBurney than Snoop Dogg.
Yes. All that sort of stuff across the board. What is it that they actually want? What do the people want? We'll find out. So do vote. I'll make sure it's in the Facebook subscribers group after this comes out. So you've got in there, first one out is Keita versus Chiesa. Second one out is all three, Visa, Gerrard and Joel Matip. And then you've got Wrexham versus Hull. So do vote away and we'll see who wins on that one. Thank you very much indeed to Neil, to Mike and to Carl. Whatever it is you're doing, just make sure you think about whether or not it should be stopped.